how we as a nation want to think about that entire chain of events and not just the arrival of populations.
But the thread...
Hi, this is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Katarmaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC ACRA.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year with WGXC Live at the Half Moon in Hudson. Come out for the annual fun at one of the busiest New Year's celebrations in the area. This year, things get started at 8 p.m. with karaoke hosted by Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the music of the band Blueberry. See blueberrylounge.com for info. And then, after midnight, DJ Var from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session keeps the airwaves and dance floor moving. The sliding scale contribution at the door helps keep WGXC on 90.7 FM in the new year. The Taste of India food truck will also be there with a portion of their food sales going to benefit WGXC. And the entire event will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. On Silent Night Hudson 2018, in partnership with Wave Farm, Phil Klein's On Silent Night returns to Hudson for a third year. Led by Phil Klein himself, participants gather at WGXC's Hudson Studio, 169 Warren Street, inside the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson at Warren and 4th Streets, entrance on 4th Street. Participants bring a radio along to become part of the moving orchestra of sounds that engages Hudson's lesser-traveled alleys and enclaves. All are invited to participate. To do so, arrive to the WGXC Hudson Studio, First Presbyterian Church, no later than 6:45 p.m. with a boombox or smartphone with external speakers. Go to unsilentnight.com/participate for more details. Unsilent Night, an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December. Each participant gets one of four tracks of music. Together, all four tracks comprise Unsilent Night. Visit unsilentnight.com for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
I'm Tom Rowe with the Local News Week in Review for WGXC. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. The biggest story of the week was large pay raises for the state's top officials. John Campbell reported in the Democrat and Chronicle that New York lawmakers have not gotten a raise in 20 years, but now are in line to be among the best paid in the country. The State Compensation Committee, a panel of current and former comptrollers, recommended December 6th that New York's 213 lawmakers get a 64% raise from $79,500 a year to $130,000 in 2021. The raises for legislators take effect January 1st unless lawmakers, who aren't scheduled in Albany anytime soon, pass legislation to stop the increases. Governor Andrew Cuomo's $179,000 salary would increase to $250,000 in 2021 if lawmakers approve that plan in January. Bill Mahoney reports for Politico that State Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie said December 12th that the ban on outside income for legislators from the pay raise committee, quote, may have put this entire pay raise in jeopardy, unquote. Heastie, a Democrat, echoed Republican criticisms of the other regulations tacked on to the pay raise for top state officials. Quote, the legislative intent, which was agreed upon between myself, the governor, and the majority leader, Senator John Flanagan, was that they were only supposed to look at the salaries, unquote, Heastie said. Quote, it's not even a debate on the issues. I get where people are on the concerns on outside income and things like that, but it was never the legislature's intention for them to do that. They pretty much decided among themselves to deal with the operations of the House, unquote. Heastie wouldn't say whether legislators would change the decision before December 31st or pass new legislation in the next session. David Lombardo reported for Capital Confidential the constitutionality of the special committee responsible for awarding state legislators a salary increase is being challenged in court. A complaint was filed in state Supreme Court in Albany County December 14th by the Government Justice Center, a conservative nonprofit law center. In that filing, the center argues the process was flawed from the beginning because state legislators did not have the authority to delegate control of their salaries. Quote, rather than face the voters after implementing their own compensation decision, members of the legislature pushed their responsibility onto a committee, unquote, reads the complaint. Quote, such a major policy decision should have been made by the members of the Senate and Assembly in legislation as required by the state constitution, unquote. Another big story this week came out of Rensselaerville in southern Albany County. H. Rhodes Schneider reported in the Altamont Enterprise that after a routine audit showed missing funds in Rensselaerville's town coffers, police were notified, and Stephen Fleming resigned as supervisor. Trooper Kara M. Burns, the public information officer for Troop G of the state police, confirmed December 13th that police are investigating possible fraud involving Fleming in the southern Albany County town. There were several local elections this week. The Albany Times-Union reported voters in the Ichabod Crane School District narrowly approved a $27.1 million capital project on December 12th. The resolution passed on a vote of 983 to 931. Quote, I would like to thank everyone who came out and supported this important project, unquote, said Superintendent of Schools Michael Vanio. In the Cairo-Durham School District, the capital project also passed by a narrow margin. Voters in the Cairo-Durham Central School District approved a $28.9 million building project by a vote of 284 to 263 on December 11th. Quote, we are grateful for the community's support in today's vote, unquote, said Superintendent Anthony Taibbi. There was also a Cairo Fire District election December 11th, with Brian Femmel defeating John Buckley 193 to 97 for fire commissioner. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts rain and snow showers Monday morning and in the early afternoon, then turning partly sunny with a high near 37. Overnight, there's a low around 19 forecast, and then Tuesday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 27 and a low around 16. Wednesday should be mostly sunny again with a high of 35 and a low around 23. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character. followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX, and this will be the final edition of Audio News for 2018. Audio News will resume on January 4th. And now, these are our stories for Friday, December 14th. The WSJTX 2.0 software suite has been released, and developer Joe Taylor, K1JT, is urging FT8 and MSK144 users to upgrade to what will become the new standard, because the FT8 and MSK144 protocols have been enhanced in a way that is not backward compatible with older versions of the program. Taylor said, quote, "The new protocols became the worldwide standard starting on December 10th, 2018, and all users should upgrade to WSJTX 2.0 by January 1st, 2019. After that date, only the new FT8 and MSK144 should be used on the air," unquote. The ARRL contest branch reports that preliminary results are now available for the 2018 ARRL November sweepstakes CW and for the 2018 September VHF contest at contests.arrl.org. The contest branch reminds participants that logs for the 2018 ARRL 10-meter contest are due by 2359 UTC on December 16th, and the 2018 ARRL EME contest logs are due by 2359 UTC on December 25th. The 2017 ARRL Bill Leonard W2SKE Professional Media Award for Audio Reporting was presented in New York on December 6th to the producers and staff of the radio program The Takeaway. The program, a joint production of Public Radio International, WGBH, and WNYC, aired a number of stories about amateur radio's role in supporting disaster relief agencies in Puerto Rico following Hurricane Maria. ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, presented the Leonard Award for Audio Reporting to the program's executive producer, Arwa Gunja, and the show's staff. The Takeaway had interviewed Corey about how radio amateurs were supporting the American Red Cross's efforts to convey safety and wellness messages from the island Commonwealth to relatives on the U.S. mainland. Sweden's Alexanderson Alternator Station, SAQ, has planned a Christmas Eve transmission on 17.2 kHz. The transmitter will be tuned up starting at around 0730 UTC, and a message will be transmitted at 0800 UTC. Listener reports are invited via email to info@alexander.ne.se or direct by postal mail to radio station Grimton 72, SE43298, Grimton, Sweden. Several NASA amateur radio clubs will mark the 50th anniversary of Apollo 8 on December 21st through the 27th, concluding the year-long NASA on the Air activity, which celebrates NASA's 60th anniversary.
And now with this week's satellite update, here's Bruce Page, KK5DO.
On December 3rd, ExceedSat was launched. It successfully turned on and started transmitting, and was therefore issued an Oscar number of VO96 for VUSAT Oscar 96. Jordan's first satellite, JY1SAT, was launched on the same rocket. After successful operation, it too was issued an Oscar number, JO97, for Jordan Oscar 97. Unfortunately, AMSAT Oscar 95, which received its designation the day before these, has turned a deaf ear to the ground. Telemetry was successfully transmitted to the ground. However, when commands were sent to start performing other functions, the satellite decided to ignore them. In other words, the receiver is deaf. AMSAT engineering is sifting through the telemetry data to determine if something is amiss. However, without being able to take a look under the hood, there is almost no way to determine what may have happened. AMSAT will try using some high-powered stations to see if their signals might be heard by the satellite. There's no speculation as to what may have occurred. From all of us at AMSAT, we wish you and yours a very happy holiday season, and we look forward to visiting with you again in 2019. This is Bruce Page, KK5DO, for the ARRL Audio News.
I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and I'm speaking with Bart Gunke, W9JJ, the ARRL Radio Sport Manager. And Bart, it's almost mid-December, so it's time to talk about November for the International Grid Chase, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. And here we are, the middle of December already, wrapping up November. We've just come off of a less active period than we might have anticipated. Activity overall was down about 40% from the month of October, but nonetheless, an exciting time. Lots of activity on all the bands, pretty much even reduction in activity, but overall activity on all the bands is looking still great.
Did you see any effect from the CW and phone sweepstakes?
I think we definitely did. And again, they would be focused just on our primary bands, no work activities during sweepstakes. You know, people were putting in long hours in those events. Two different weekends. We also had an EME contest in the month of November. We had CQ contest in the month of November. So plenty of contesting still going on and still a lot of overall submissions. November submissions were almost exactly the same as October. 23,500 submissions, still very busy people uploading to Logbook of the World.
That's a lot of grids being chased.
It is.
Yes.
And again, those are the overall uploads to Logbook with the content that we evaluated for the month of November.
Now, speaking of uploads and downloads, we have our certificates that are downloadable now. Is that correct?
We do. We've posted to the International Grid Chase website. You'll see now across the tabs available to you of Home Leaderboard, the next one is Certificates. And go ahead and select that, put in your call sign, start to reducing perhaps the segmenting of which bands or modes you'd like to look at, or you can look at all of them. And then as you go through, you can list up the 16 different rows of detail by band or by mode that may be of interest to you.
Better have a lot of ink in the printer then.
Definitely. And it will also organize it by rank. So the very first ranking will be the upper left to as many of the displayed month and band rows that you want to show.
So even I could print a certificate.
Absolutely.
For all the grids that I've worked. And
it's really all about uploading the Logbook of the World. If you've uploaded five QSOs or 500,000 QSOs, they are all reported and all available through the certificate process.
That's great. Thank you, Bart.
Thank you, Steve. Happy holidays.
You too. This is the ARRL Audio News Propagation Forecast for Friday, December 14th. Another sunspot appeared, but it didn't last long. By the end of the week, it was gone. Even so, the solar flux index bumped up to about 71, which is always welcomed. As a result, look for DX on 20 and 30 meters during the daylight hours. The last blast of solar wind is behind us, and we have a bit more on the way that will be arriving around December 16th. But don't expect much disruption to the HF bands. In fact, this would be a good time to hunt DX on 160, 80, 60, and 40 meters. On VHF and UHF, the Geminid meteor shower peaks this weekend and then trails off for the next few days. If you have 6 or 2 meter capability, fire up those radios over the next several days.
And that concludes ARRL Audio News for this week. Our thanks to all contributors to this week's report. ARRL Audio News is produced by the American Radio Relay League, the National Association for Amateur Radio. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment about ARRL Audio News, email us at audionews@arrl.org. This program is copyright ARRL, all rights reserved. 73, and thanks for listening.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year. New Year's Eve with WGXC live at the Half Moon in Hudson for WGXC's annual New Year's Eve event, live broadcast, and a fun night at Half Moon in Hudson. The evening gets started with karaoke with Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the sounds of the band Blueberry. You can go to blueberrylounge.com for information about them. And then DJ Var from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session takes over after hours. Your contribution at the door keeps community radio on the air in your area on 90.7 FM. There's food from the Taste of India food truck outside. Tune in, turn out, and ring in the new year at Half Moon and Hudson starting at 8 p.m. Monday, December 31st into Tuesday, January 1st, New Year's Eve with WGXC on the air and at the Half Moon in Hudson.
Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, December the 17th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Can the GOP muster the votes to avoid a government shutdown? Also on our Monday rundown, groups laud Zinke's departure, but worry about who's next, plus a call for review of Veterans Administration dog research. Topping our news, just days before a deadline to avert a partial government shutdown, President Trump, Democratic leaders, and the Republican-controlled Congress are at a stalemate over the president's treasured border wall. That according to the New York Times. They report Republican leaders are also confronting a more mundane and awkward problem. Their vanquished and retiring members are sick and tired of Washington and don't want to show up anymore to vote. The Times is calling it the revenge of the lame ducks. Many lawmakers relegated to cubicles as incoming members take their offices, having been skipping votes in the weeks since House Republicans were swept from their power in the midterm elections. Republican leaders are unsure whether they will ever return. Conservation groups welcomed the departure of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, saying it could take years to reverse the damage to America's public lands during his time in office. Mark Richardson has our report.
President Donald Trump announced Saturday that the former Navy SEAL and Montana congressman will leave his post by the end of the year amid ethics charges involving business deals, policy decisions, and travel arrangements. Despite high hopes that as a Westerner, Zinke would be sensitive to public lands protections, Aaron Weiss with the Center for Western Priorities thinks he'll be remembered as the most harmful Interior Secretary for public lands in the nation's history.
Secretary Zinke focused on slashing Bear's Ears by three quarters and Grand Staircase Escalante by half. And that's going to be the legacy that he leaves behind, is this attempt not to stand up and protect public lands, but to open them up to oil and gas drilling.
White House sources said he was forced out of the job. Zinke is the fourth Trump cabinet member to resign under a cloud of suspicion. The most serious of more than a dozen accusations involves a land deal with the chairman of oil services mega firm Halliburton in Zinke's hometown of Whitefish, Montana, now under investigation by the Justice Department.
The Denver-based Center for Western Priorities is a nonprofit group that advocates for balanced conservation and energy practices in the West. Congress has a chance to provide support to workers and communities in Kentucky suffering from the impacts of the coal mining industry.
The Black Lung Disability Trust Fund helps coal miners with black lung disease and their families cover medical costs. A tax on coal mining, which finances the fund, is slated to be cut in half by the end of the year. Kenny Fleming of Eastern Kentucky, who had to retire early when he developed black lung, says lawmakers are pushing to extend the tax for just 1 year.
The trust fund is a lifesaver. It's helped so many people in so many ways. But now it's in jeopardy, and we're trying to put a Band-Aid on it.
There are also calls in Congress to move on the Reclaim Act. Eric Dixon with the Appalachian Citizens Law Center explains that measure calls for a $1 billion commitment to mine reclamation.
It would put people to work actually cleaning up coal mine sites that have never been cleaned up and that currently cause pollution and negative public health impacts.
Dixon and Fleming are among those hoping Congress approves at least a one-year extension of the trust fund and passes the Reclaim Act before adjourning for the year. Mary Sherman reporting.
And a new report paints a clearer picture of just who lacks health coverage in the state of Texas. Eric Galatis has more.
Unless Texas lawmakers make significant changes to health policies, the number of Texans without health insurance is projected to rise, according to a new report released by the Episcopal Health Foundation. Brian Sasser with the foundation says the report paints a clearer picture of just who lacks health coverage in the Lone Star State. He notes many work full-time in stores, wait tables, build homes, or care for children, but still cannot afford insurance.
I think what may surprise some folks is that working Texans make up the majority of the uninsured in Texas. In fact, two-thirds of uninsured Texans live in working families.
More than half of Texans without coverage live in families that include at least one full-time worker, according to the report. More than 4 in 10 live in families where at least one adult works at a company with more than 50 employees. A majority of Texans say they want the state to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, which could insure more than 1 million residents. Lawmakers have argued the move could put taxpayers on the hook for Medicaid costs if the ACA implodes.
The report confirms that Texas has the highest number of uninsured people in the nation, currently nearly 5 million residents. And finally, Tramell Gomes tells us that research on dogs by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is officially under review to determine whether the dogs are being treated humanely and if the program is necessary.
The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine is conducting the review after the animal rights group White Coat Waste Project launched a massive media campaign in 2017. It used information from public records requests to spotlight what it called the mistreatment of puppies in painful heart attack studies. The campaign caught the attention of a bipartisan group of lawmakers who introduced the Puppers Act in Congress to outlaw unkind and painful dog experiments in VA facilities. Justin Goodman with the White Coat Waste Project says there is already overwhelming evidence that the research isn't needed.
The facts are clear. The VA admits that it hasn't had a breakthrough from its dog testing since the 1960s. A government program that's failed to produce for half a century does not deserve taxpayer support, particularly when it involves torturing dogs to death.
The VA commissioned the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine to review its entire canine research program. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
I am the Magic Stranger. I'm here with special guest Amy Rigby.
This is a song about my roots. Super boring. Bad memories. They used to laugh.
shoes.
Nanu Badilla, a.k.a. Nanu, listen to WGXC, 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Collinville, Catskill, you know, ha, on the count of three.
Everybody run back to your fantasy.
Tune in Monday, December 17th on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Lincoln Mayorga will be in with the Monday musical matinee after the noon news. Then it's time for the Vital Weekly show at 2 p.m. At 6 p.m., we'll hear from Bridge Street Theater Managing Director John Soule about the Catskill Theater's new season. Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman is on at 7 p.m. at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. The constitutionality of the special committee responsible for awarding state legislators a salary increase is being challenged in court. A complaint was filed in state Supreme Court in Albany County December 14th by the Government Justice Center, a conservative nonprofit law center. In that filing, the center argues the process was flawed from the beginning because state legislators did not have the authority to delegate control of their salaries. The complaint reads, and I quote, "Rather than face the voters after implementing their own compensation decision, members of the legislature pushed their responsibility onto a committee. Such a major policy decision should have been made by members of the Senate and Assembly in legislation as required by the state constitution," end quote. The complaint also alleges the Compensation Committee exceeded its legal authority by imposing outside income limitations and violated the state's open meeting law with the drafting of its final report. The center is asking the court to nullify the committee's final report and to order the state not to implement the 64% pay raises. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit are Assemblymember Michael Fitzpatrick, a Long Island Republican, Robert Arzio, and David Buchan from Saratoga County, and Bronx resident Roxanne Delgado, who spoke out against the committee at one of the public hearings. Read the full story and the complaint at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting 2019 spending plans have been finalized and adopted in Dutchess, Sullivan, and Ulster counties. In Dutchess, County Executive Marcus Molinaro signed the budget December 14th and thanked the county legislature for a, and I quote, thoughtful and illuminating, end quote, review process. The budget reduces the county property tax levy for the fifth consecutive year and lowers the property tax rate for a fourth year. With no discussion and on a unanimous vote, the Sullivan County Legislature adopted that county's $235 million budget for 2019. Crediting an improved economy, the tax levy will decrease next year by 1.6%. There will also be decreases in both the residential and commercial solid waste fees. And Ulster County Executive Michael Hine, December 13th, signed the county's 2019 spending plan that includes the lowest county property taxes since 2009, as well as a number of initiatives, including the new Restorative Justice and Community Empowerment Center. Read all three stories at MidHudsonNews.com. Richard Moody is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Columbia County Board of Supervisors, December 12th, adopted its proposed $156.5 million 2019 budget on a vote of 20-1. The spending plan includes a 1.7% tax levy increase for county property owners. Claremont Town Supervisor Raymond Statz cast the lone dissenting vote, questioning the necessity of a tax increase at a time when the county's revenues and cash reserves continue to rise. Statz said, and I quote, "I am the most senior supervisor on the board, and I have more trouble this year than ever before with approving a budget that raises taxes yet again. We have continued to raise taxes every year, not to balance our budget, but to build our bank account. I know it is time to give the taxpayers a break," end quote. County revenue increased by $5 million in 2018, in large part due to increased sales tax income. County Comptroller Robert Campanora said the tax levy increase will have a minimal impact on taxpayers, arguing the average amount that property owners pay will stay nearly the same at about $6 per $1,000 of assessed value. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts rain and snow showers Monday morning and in the early afternoon, then turning partly sunny with a high near 37. Overnight, there's a low around 19 forecast, and then Tuesday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 27 and a low around 16. Wednesday should be mostly sunny again with a high of 35 and a low around 23. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears. Here's the song Wanna Be There from the group Blueberry. It's playing at WGXC's New Year's Eve extravaganza at the Half Moon in Hudson.
Secrets are safe with me. Oh, you wanna be there?
That was Wanna Be There from Blueberry, who are playing at WGXC's New Year's Eve party at the Half Moon in Hudson this year.
Next, we have these reports.
Here's an interview from our partners at WOOCLP from the Sanctuary for Media Art in Troy, New York. You can go to the SoundCloud page for Media Sanctuary or look up the Sanctuary for Media Art webpage or Facebook page online for more information or to hear the complete interview.
So the Rensselaer Plateau is a distinct geological area in Rensselaer County. It's in the eastern third of the county. It's roughly, it's about 118,000 acres in size. It was formed when the Taconics were formed, and it's a layer of, essentially this big layer of gray wacky, which was the fifth layer of rock down when this arc of volcanic islands collided with the North American continent. And it wound up on top in the area where the plateau is. So it's high elevation, poor drainage, acidic soil, and that results in a natural area that's really more similar to the northern forests than the surrounding lowlands. And it's been relatively undeveloped because of the geography, pretty much. And so it's resulted in an area that's the fifth largest, unbroken forested area or contiguous forested area in New York State.
Okay. And why, given your description of the terrain, why should anybody care about the Rensselaer Plateau?
Well, it's not only is it the fifth largest contiguous forest in New York State, it's also home to wildlife that need large stretches of forest, such as moose and bobcat and the goshawk, which is a type of accipiter, a hawk. It's the wildlife that depend on not just one place, but multiple areas to feed and breed and migrate between. And that large amount of forest is also stewarding our water resources, the headwaters of several small rivers that feed into the Hudson River and feed into and also deliver to the Tom Hanek Reservoir, providing clean water for many people. So it's when you have large stretches of forest, you're protecting wildlife and water as well as recreational areas for the people of Rensselaer County to enjoy. And those are just a few reasons.
Okay. And so what is the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance?
Well, we are a not-for-profit organization, a land trust, if you will, and we our mission is to promote and facilitate the conservation of these forests. We do that through actually acquiring land, purchasing it ahead of selling it to the state to become a state forest or wildlife management area. We're doing a lot of education for landowners so that they know how to steward their own land. I guess that sums it up right there. I could keep going, but
we're speaking with Jim and Annie of the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance about some of the exciting work going on east of Albany and Troy in the high country there. What do you think are the major issues confronting the security of the Rensselaer Plateau?
Well, the biggest threat is increased development. So development pressure from the suburbs pushing out into the forests and fragmentation and parcelization of the forest. So putting in, and that would be there's new businesses coming in to Rensselaer and Troy that are going to be attracting people that are going to want places to live. So we don't oppose development in appropriate areas, but if it's if you have development that divides the forest up into smaller forest blocks, that affects all the services that Annie was talking about the forest providing.
So the public perception, I think, of Rensselaer County, at least my perception of Rensselaer County, is it's fairly conservative, and that people who live there would be hostile to the idea of limiting development or limiting unrestrained growth. Do you find that that's a challenge in the work that you're doing?
No, not at all, really, because, you know, you asked what the threat was, the threats development. We're not opposing development. We are advocating for conservation of the forests with landowners that want to voluntarily conserve their land. And we hope to outpace development with conservation. So we found that we've got quite a bit of support on both sides of the aisle. Congressman Faso was actually a pretty good advocate for, you know, the work that we're doing. The county executive, past and present, have both been very supportive. Our two New York State senators, Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, are supportive of the work we're doing. So it's both sides of the aisle. We have support from, you know, the town supervisors from most of the towns in the region. So no, there's not. We haven't seen any political opposition to what we're doing.
Well, I was struck at the last of your great annual fundraisers that you have not just support from people I would expect to be supporting conservation, but also the extractive industries, the miners and foresters in Rensselaer County who do business there. So that is indication of a coalition that's pretty impressive. How can people find out more about the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance if they're interested in finding out or becoming more involved?
You can visit our website, www.rensselaerplateau.org. We also have a Facebook page that we post our events on. You can call us, 518-712-9211. Email us, get in touch with any kind of question. And we have year-round activities for families, for people of all ages to get out into nature together. So find out what our events are, show up, and get to know some new people, and we hope to see you out there.
Sign up for our email list and our mailing list, and you'll get some great, you know, e-news and newsletters.
Yep, that too. And on our homepage on our website, there's a little button you can click to sign up for e-news.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for coming by. It's great to hear about your good work, and hope to see you out in the woods sometime.
Thank you so much.
All right. Hope to see you there too.
That interview was from our media partners at WOOCLP in Troy, New York, run by the Sanctuary for Media Art. Go to their SoundCloud page, Media Sanctuary, or their Facebook page or web page for the Sanctuary for Independent Media for more information or to hear that full interview.
Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. WRGB-TV in Albany reports that Rensselaerville Town Supervisor Stephen Fledging has been charged with grand larceny third degree, falsifying business records, both felonies, and official misconduct, a misdemeanor. Fledging resigned from his position in the town in southern Albany County after a routine town audit discovered funds missing from town coffers. Fledging was arraigned in town of Westerloo Court and is due back there on December 17th. Joseph Spector, Chad Arnold, and Jeff Platsky report in the Poughkeepsie Journal that some New York farmers and business people believe the president's tariff policies have already slowed down sales and led to higher prices for steel. Quote, as soon as they started talking tariffs, the imports slowed down, unquote, said Joseph Morgan, the chief executive at a Cortland County company that makes things such as steel enclosures for military electronics and screws for aerospace. Quote, all the jobs we bid on last year, we were losing money on. It was one of the busiest years with some of our lowest margins, unquote. In September, the Trump administration added a 10% tariff on $200 billion in Chinese products that is set to jump to 25% on January 1st unless a new deal is struck between the countries. Tim McMorris, general manager of Marco Manufacturing, an electronics company in Poughkeepsie, is hoping a deal will be made. Quote, "We were expecting a 25% tariff on a lot of the parts we import to build our printed circuit boards. So that's a good thing if, it, in fact, they are going to delay that or hopefully remove it altogether," unquote, he said. Farmers have seen prices for soybeans drop by nearly $2 per bushel since the tariffs were first announced. In central New York, Seth Pritchard's 800-acre farm produces an average of 36,000 bushels of soybeans a year. So $2 a bushel is a major difference. Quote, "The tariffs impacted us significantly," unquote, he said. Read the full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Tim Martin reports for Columbia Green Media that the Hudson boys basketball team won the Battle of the Bridge Cup December 14th, beating Catskill 93-79. It was the first loss of the year for Catskill, which came into the game ranked 13th in the state among Class B schools. Hudson's Levon Fernandez was too much for Catskill, though, scoring a career-high 41 points. On December 19th, Hudson takes on Taconic Hills and Catskill plays against Chatham. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. I'm Tom Rowe. This has been the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Drug policy reform advocates are confident that in 2019, New York will join the rush of states legalizing recreational use of marijuana. The Empire State was slow in allowing extremely limited use of medical marijuana, but some advocates say what may have seemed inconceivable just a few years ago, regulated legal sales for adult recreational use, could become a reality as early as next spring. According to Cassandra Federique with the Drug Policy Alliance, Colorado and the West Coast led the way, but with recreational use now approved in Massachusetts, Vermont, and Maine, and pending legislation in other states, the Northeast is catching up.
These places are really taking the lessons that we've learned from the first states and trying to build stronger and more effective regulation policies. And so we're at a moment where the Northeast feels like it's time for us to regulate as well.
In August, Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed a task force to draft legislation for a regulated marijuana program, which he is expected to include in his January budget proposal. While regulated sales carry the promise of hundreds of millions of dollars in state tax revenue, Frederick points out that a shift from prohibition to regulation is a criminal justice issue.
Marijuana prohibition has been a tool of law enforcement and social service agencies to criminalize poor people and communities of color. And it has really made our communities less healthy and less safe.
Many advocates want tax money from marijuana sales to fund restitution for the communities most affected by criminalization. Frederick adds that the trend toward decriminalization and regulation of marijuana also provides an opening for conversations about ways to approach drug use in general as a public health issue.
That is the space that we need to be in, especially as we see how criminalization has not saved us from a current overdose crisis, and in some instances have exacerbated the current public health crisis.
Recreational marijuana bills have cleared legislative committees in Connecticut and New Jersey. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts rain and snow showers Monday morning and in the early afternoon, then turning partly sunny with a high near 37. Overnight, there's a low around 19 forecast, and then Tuesday should be mostly sunny with a high of just 27 and a low around 16. Wednesday should be mostly sunny again with a high of 35 and a low around 23. Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative radio for open ears.
Hear music and sounds, radio art and melodies, every day from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. Weekdays, there is all sorts of local talk, interviews with your friends and neighbors, music from down in the valley, previews of local events and more, weekdays from 4 to 8 p.m. Then stay tuned for WGXC Live at 8 p.m. with live DJs, live events, live broadcasts, and more on the radio at 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer 2.0 GHz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 GHz or faster, CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year with WGXC Live at the Half Moon in Hudson. Come out for the annual fun at one of the busiest New Year's celebrations in the area. This year, things get started at 8 p.m. with karaoke hosted by Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the music of the band Blueberry. See blueberrylounge.com for info. And then, after midnight, DJ Var from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session keeps the airwaves and dance floor moving. The sliding scale contribution at the door helps keep WGXC on 90.7 FM in the new year. The Taste of India food truck will also be there, with a portion of their food sales going to benefit WGXC. And the entire event will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year with WGXC Live at the Half Moon in Hudson. Come out for the annual fun at one of the busiest New Year's celebrations in the area. This year, things get started at 8 p.m. with karaoke hosted by Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the music of the band Blueberry. And then, after midnight, DJ Var from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session keeps the airwaves and the dance floor moving. The sliding scale contribution at the door helps keep WGXC on 90.7 FM in the new year. The Taste of India food truck will also be there, with a portion of their food sales going to benefit WGXC.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a road runner, honey.
Thank you.